development of the human family through the process of evolution to this state of personhood seems to be the goal of everything so far. And then we saw that about 3000 BC, the first glimmer of rational consciousness begins to dawn, and this proceeds to develop until about 1000 BC, when the basis for higher states of consciousness as a possibility for each human individual for the first time in human history becomes possible. Just a few people succeeded, and these were the great founders of religions, all of whom appear significantly in that millennium before Christ and a few centuries later with Mohammed. Now, this state has a biological basis, according to Joseph Pierce in his most valuable book, The Magical Child Matures. And I will follow a few of his thoughts at this point. And that is that the brain that is functioning at this period of human history corresponds to that of the reptiles, which is that brain which is capable of translating sensitive stimuli into images, but without differentiating one's perception from the reality itself. In other words, one is immersed in matter, in survival, in that particular form of animal life. When this progresses to the typhonic level, the midbrain comes into functioning, which is a more powerful brain than the reptilian, and it processes the information through the senses and transforms it into likes and dislikes and the development of emotional responses to the sensory stimuli. Okay. Now, when the specifically human brain, sometimes called the new brain, comes into function, this is much more powerful than the lower brains, but it depends on the information which they have processed in order to function. And the new brain then has a tremendous power, and that power is designed for further development and differentiation as well as use of these lower forms of brain function. But unfortunately, in human history, instead of the general public, that is us, making use of the creative power of the brain, which is biologically available and which automatically evolves with time, this enormous energy, this new energy, is used to reinforce the fixations, the attitudes, and the physicality that is proper to these lower brains. Hence, you might say that this energy, which is capable of almost unlimited growth and creativity, is put into the straitjacket of backing up and adding force to the energy that was already being used by these lower forms of brain power. And thus we find here, instead of developing personhood and the capacity to relate to other people, to belong to a group, to serve others, to cooperate rather than just to compete, to build bridges, to harmonize, to try to join together in various units for the good of the whole, and above all, to work for justice and peace, which are rational objects and the proper object of the socialization process of personhood and rational consciousness, to negotiate rather than to rely on primitive ways of settling arguments, jousts, arms, and fighting. This immense energy of creativity is in the service of destroying the whole culture by using this brain power to develop bigger and better ways of having power over other people, controlling other people, having bigger and better pleasures for ourselves. And in other words, it backs up the self-centered motivation that was necessary for survival in these earlier periods of more primitive consciousness, but is totally inappropriate in a rational level of consciousness, in which these lower values, which were proper and necessary at their particular time in human evolution, but which now have to be related to the higher human values that have now become possible through the development of human consciousness. We can say that the new brain power, until these lower levels of consciousness are integrated into the ongoing development of human nature, which is what union or unity is. It's the integration of the lower into the higher value system and the higher powers, not just a forceful manipulation of parts into a whole, which is the work of this self-centered intelligence. Then the immense capacity of the human family to develop its true potential for union, for the good of the human family, and for its relationship to the cosmos, to the earth, and to the ultimate reality is severely limited, to say the least. Well, now, let's look at the development of an individual human being. And significantly, the great researchers in human infancy and childhood, such as Piaget and his followers, and others who've developed on his principles, tell us that that each human being recapitulates from its first year to the seventh year this whole program of human evolution. And so, we have a lot to learn about ourselves just by knowing what the appropriate attitudes, levels, and values of each level of human consciousness, as it can be discovered through anthropological research, is. Hence its importance to understand the human condition, which is to understand one's own makeup, problems, and the reasons for our problems, because now when you have the facts, maybe you can do something about it. So the infant in its first year is, at this level of consciousness, it is totally immersed in matter, in the pleasurable experiences, in the reassurance of the human voice, and especially the human face of the mother. It needs the prompt attention to its needs, and it's so fragile when it emerges from the womb that it needs instantly the care that will reassure it that its new world is somewhat continuous with the one it enjoyed in the womb. Hence, the mother's breast is the proper place for this reassurance, because there, when it's being nursed, it hears the heartbeat of the mother, which it resonates with or was enjoying in the womb of his mother. He hears her voice, and her touch reminds him of the touch that was so reassuring in the world of the womb. And so if this bonding takes place right away, then the child's emotional life is immediately well established, and it's on the road to accepting the human adventure with its little emotional life, which is extremely fragile. Suppose the child is not wanted, okay, that it's not picked up regularly, that it's not cuddled, kissed, loved, fed, its needs promptly established. How is it going to interpret this? It sort of says on the emotional level, which is not thinking, of course, because it doesn't have reason, but the child is capable at a very early age, it seems, of sensing at an intuitive level whether this business of living is a good idea or not. And if its needs are not promptly met, then it experiences a kind of dull, pervasive anger or rage. When I was novice master in the monastery for several years, we received a candidate who, by all appearances, was just an ideal candidate. Very intelligent, good family, good education, very courteous, respectful, and talented. So he came in. Well, all of a sudden, he got so nervous he couldn't sing. His voice would lock up when it was time to intone something. He couldn't relate to the other novices without constant anxiety. In those days, we didn't speak, so that only made it worse. We didn't speak to each other, that is. And so everything was done to try to assure him that he was appreciated and loved, but he couldn't believe it. He just thought everybody disliked him and that he was making a bungle of everything. He wasn't. It was a totally subjective and mistaken judgment. So everybody was trying to reassure him and sort of spoon-feed him, almost holding his hand, and saying, you're going to make it. These are just trials. We tried to think up all kinds of methods of reassuring him. Nothing worked. So finally he left. A few months later, his family happened to come by, and his mother and I, who I'd met when he was a novice at the family visits, was saying, just casually, she said, you know, when my son was just a few months old, he developed a serious skin disease, a dermatology of some kind. We had to put him in the hospital for about a month or 6 weeks. We were separated from him, and when he came home, the doctor said, you know, this skin is still very tender. You must not pick this child up, except very rarely, and then feed him, of course, with the bottle, etc. Well, of course, my ears just went straight up. I said, now I know what's wrong with this wonderful young man. How did a child who has no reason or understanding interpret that tragic human pathetic experience? An infant translated the only way he's capable of. It wants prompt attention. It needs affection. Without affection, it withers. Whether that affection is withdrawn intentionally or unintentionally. This is one of the amazing things about the human condition, that the damage done may be nobody's fault, just the vicissitudes of being a human being. But if it happens, then the emotional response of constant anger, rage, because his affection and other needs are not being met, becomes habitual and gets sort of established in the images in the brain in some way that semi-permanently may disable that person for certain kinds of stress. Now, monastic life is a very sort of stressful situation, and it requires a certain emotional balance in order to deal with it, especially in those days when the rule of silence was very strict. So he was perfectly capable of leading an ordinary life in which other things occupied his mind and so on, and he wasn't in such, you know, direct contact with the unconscious. And he just needed more time for the healing of that wound. And having known him afterwards, his life has gone along very well. But he every now and then he has a little flashback to that anxiety. But it was just too much to lead certain kinds of life that were particularly demanding. Now, all of us have a tolerance point. All of us have been at this level. Now, what is characteristic then is the need for survival and security. And this is a biological need which is essential for the child at that age in order to continue its growth. But security is not the ultimate human value. It's the ideal value for the child at this age because he's centered on survival. But once his security system is established, then he or she is ready to take on the next value. Now, the next instinctual drive is the development of the emotions, especially likes and dislikes. Now, what is characteristic of typhonic consciousness is this magical quality, which the child also has at this period, in which he can't distinguish his dream world, his images, from reality. It also suffers somewhat from the fears that were typical of our typhonic ancestors. That is to say, it may be a little afraid of the dark, it may be afraid of the boogeyman, it may be afraid of the characters it sees on the TV in our age. And so it's developing a symbolic interpretation of reality that is appropriate to that level of consciousness, while its emotional life is increasing and it experiences a lot of likes and dislikes, and its moods change very rapidly. Now, it's also learning to talk, and this accelerates its movement into the socialization period of the child, which is maybe roughly 4 to 7. And at that time, it's interiorizing the values of parents, peers, or the culture insofar as it filters down without question. Normally, it unquestionably accepts the information that it's given and the values and the parents acting as models. Meanwhile, its triune brain is developing, and as it comes out at 4, its thinking capacity of the new brain begins to function, and it begins to be able to make some logical, what Piaget calls, I think, functional or operational logic, which is it is able to make judgments without really thinking in abstract terms yet. From 7 to 11, it begins to be able to use reason and develops the capacity for abstract thinking, for translating the images into abstractions like ethics and good and virtue and truth and such concepts as that. Now this is biologically programmed, apparently, because according to Pierce, about every 3.5 or 4 years, just as in human evolution, there was a kind of spurt due to a development of the brain, so in the child, about every 3.5 or 4 years, there's a new capacity of the triune brain comes into focus. So that from about 1 to puberty, the biological foundation or ground structure for life as a fully human being is completely established. And at least that's the blueprint. Now, other people can interfere with that biological process. And this, along with negative experiences of life, is what produces defense mechanisms, coping with difficult situations or emotions in a way that's inadequate, or in a way that leaves behind stress or tension, which makes it more difficult for the brain to unfold towards higher values and twists its energy around so that it uses its increasing brain power and energy, the new brain energy, to reinforce its programs of self-defense or the programs for happiness that are beginning to develop in compensatory relationship to its grievances with life. Now, at 15, the process seems to be complete, and that part of the brain, the left hemisphere, which is open to the spiritual world, begins to function. In other words, the first 11 years of life are designed for the full development of the self as distinct identity from other objects outside. This is the function of logical thinking. Logical thinking requires a subject-object relationship. Now, after the biological process has been completed, then the reverse is meant to happen. That is, the movement from the particular to the general. First part of life is to enter into through particular experiences to develop that self-identity as thoroughly distinct from all the other identities. Then comes the opportunity to translate that experience back into the higher values of the spiritual potentiality of the human being, with the new brain, left hemisphere, being the basis for it.